history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, a program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some people around you with some stories to tell. All we need to do is ask a few questions and take the time to listen. That's what we do each week on this program. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget that price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, so often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And the gentleman we're going to meet today is 92 years young, lives in Merced, California, originally from New Jersey, though. And boy, does he have some stories of flying Navy fighters, F-4U Corsairs, in the Pacific during World War II. Let's go way back, though. Walt Burr, growing up in Dover, New Jersey.
Right.
I've heard of Dover, England, Dover, Delaware. Where's Dover, New Jersey? What kind of place was that?
Well, small town, about 10,000 people then. An old town. It was there during the Revolutionary War.
Did you have brothers and sisters you had to try to keep up with?
No. It's the only child.
So what kind of tricks were you up to as a kid?
Well, not too much. We lived on the side of a mountain covered with trees, and we'd go out into the woods and have a good time. Every time a plane went over, I had to look up at it, and I had never been in an airplane until I got in the Navy, but I always wanted to. Built model airplanes.
And you probably heard about people like Lindbergh and
pilots. Oh, yes. His flight across the Atlantic was of great interest to a young boy,
sure.
Me, and lots of others.
You would have been 17 when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. So would that have been your senior year of high school?
No, I was going to Rutgers University studying agriculture.
So you'd already graduated high school.
Yeah.
You're off at college. Did you have any idea that a war could happen or would happen?
Oh, well, yes. On the East Coast, we were already having German submarines trying to sink the ships that we were sending to England. Even though we were not in the war,
right.
I don't think that we really realized what the situation was. A lot of people didn't want to get involved in war in Europe. We didn't envision a war in the Pacific.
So that must have been quite a jolt when you heard that news.
Oh, yeah.
You remember how you found out?
Yeah, I sure do. I was laying on my bed in the fraternity house listening to a pro football game from New York City around 1 o'clock in the East Coast, 7 o'clock in Hawaii. It got our attention big time.
So they interrupted the football broadcast with the news.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that I finished listening to the game or whether it was still on, or it was a whole new subject of stuff to talk about.
And here you are in a fraternity house. Plenty of guys to talk to about it,
I'm sure. Yes. Yeah. I was a freshman when I started my sophomore year, and when I found out that 2 years of school, the Navy would accept folks to try to enlist, which I promptly did, specifically as a cadet.
To fly.
To fly.
But you'd never been in an airplane before.
Never been in an airplane, no. I just knew that's what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
If I could. And fortunately, I could. The Navy had an excellent program for training prospective pilots. Started us out with a CPT, civilian pilot training, flying Piper Cubs, still wearing our own clothes, but in the Navy.
Right. Was that a rush for you the first time you got up in the air?
Oh, yes. It was really a rush. The gentleman who ran the flight school that we were at in Ogdensburg, New York, was a chain smoker of cigars, and I'd never even thought about wanting to smoke. He took me up for my first flight and carried a box of cigars along with him and smoked in the airplane, puffing on his cigar, and it didn't bother me at all. I loved the plane, but that was my first flight.
Were there some moments along that way of training? Because I've heard a lot of stories from guys during this time, and we just kind of take it for granted now that, you know, planes take off carriers and they land on carriers. But this was so pioneering and revolutionary at the time. And so many guys died just in training stateside along the way. Were there some moments along that journey of training that you said, boy, I don't really know what we're doing here. Should we really be doing it this way?
What I wanted to do is be able to do whatever it took to do it. And the Navy deliberately put a lot of pressure on you. If you couldn't take it, they washed out.
Right. You probably saw that happen to a lot of guys you knew.
Oh, yeah. So the pressure was there all the time.
What do you think it was about you that enabled you to handle that pressure and to perform under it?
Well, number one, I wanted to very badly. I did the best I could on whatever it was. Passed the ground school courses okay. Did all the physical stuff okay. I got through that phase and went on to further flight training.
Did you have an idea of what kind of plane you wanted to fly?
Oh, always wanted to be a fighter pilot. But again, you had no great choice in that. When you could ask for whatever you wanted, but that didn't mean you were going to get it. So after I went through all the cadet syllabus and got my wings and got commissioned as an ensign, they sent me to DeLand, Florida to be a dive bomber pilot, flying SBDs, which was a very nice, rugged, great plane. Then we moved into a newer plane, the Helldiver SB-2C, went to Hawaii. And by then, the Navy needed more fighter pilots because of the kamikazes. I became very fortunate in that they moved me into Corsair, flying a Corsair F4U. And I was thrilled about that and just loved it. It was a great airplane to fly, and you just loved every minute of that.
I've got a couple questions on that. The SBDs and the SB-2Cs as dive bombers, your role would have been a little different had you been deployed in those. And earlier on in the war, places like Midway, I mean, there were tons of these going in. Very hazardous job. But one, I'm sure the capabilities were different from those dive bombers to the Corsair. And also, if you had gone over in dive bombers, you're responsible for a gunner who's sitting behind you and facing the other way, right?
Right.
And the Corsair is just you.
Yeah, right.
Did you like that better, only being responsible for yourself instead of having another guy that you had to worry about?
Well, yes, not because I objected to the other guy back there, because he had his chores to do, one of them being calling off the altitudes as you did your dive bombing run so that you pulled out before you hit the ground.
That's kind of an important job.
Yeah, because you might, example, one of our guys in training dove into a lake. He didn't realize that he was going too low and just hit the water. And he had a gunner in the back seat who had never been up in a plane before. That was a young man's first flight.
Wow.
And he had just come. He asked the regular gunner, could he go up in his place? And he did. And
wow.
Anyway, they dove into the lake and both were killed.
And I know that later on you'd see things that were just as bad or worse, but as a young pilot in training, to see something like that happen, that had to be hard.
It was, yes. But you just can't let it bother you like it would if you allowed it to. Realize that can happen to you just as easy as it happened to the man that it happened to. No matter what you did during World War II, whether you were a fighter pilot or a cook in the galley on a ship, your life was on the line.
Absolutely. There were no safe jobs. So that move from a two-person plane to just you, even though you're not responsible for someone else, you lose a little bit of a safety net too, and then there's more that you have to stay on top of. I mean, you've got a lot to be responsible for.
Yeah. Yes, if you could do it, why, fine. If you couldn't, the Navy was going to find that out before you got into a combat situation.
And how about, can you quantify for us or at least describe the difference in power and aerobatic ability when you went from a dive bomber to that F4U? Was it a big step up?
Oh, yes. F4U could go 440 knots, straight and level, full power, 3,600 horsepower. It was able to do all kinds of maneuvers. Dive bombers were rugged, but the SBD went maybe 170, something like that. SB-2C went a little faster than that, but the Corsair was built to stand a lot more stress than they were.
Would it be somewhat parallel to say that you kind of went from a checker cab to a Ferrari?
Well, yeah, but the dive bomber in its own function was built to do a straight down dive with dive brakes that opened up.
Right.
So you didn't go too fast. You could maneuver the plane around in the dive. Of course, you don't have a lot of time to do.
Yeah.
But it was just a different function.
Sure.
You know, you really were able to do so much more in the Corsair. We did dive bombing in it. You could put the main gear down as a dive brake, but we never did. We always dove clean. We'd start a run around 20,000 feet and pull out down around 2,000 or a little bit before. We'd be doing maybe 500 knots when we'd pull out.
You're pulling some G's there.
Yeah. Yes, and you get all gray, but if you pull that much, why, you were right on the ragged edge of maybe passing out.
That was my question. Were you ever afraid of that, that you might pass out on one of these runs?
Oh, yeah. You were not afraid, but conscious of when you start to pull and you start to get gray, let off the pull a little bit. Don't pull harder, pull easier. When you dove that distance and built up that speed, if you weren't pulling out by 2,000 feet, you were in trouble. One dive bombing practice run in Hawaii, I pulled too hard and grayed out. And when I came to, I thought I was still going down and pulled, but I was going up. I had pulled so hard. And I was in a cloud. I thought I was going down, and I pulled hard and did a loop and came out going straight towards the ground. and pulled out that. I never did that again.
Well, and you're lucky you had a chance not to do it again, because I'm just thinking there are probably guys killed with that very same confusion.
Well, yes. I lived through it and learned a lesson that I never let myself get in that position. When this was practice run in Hawaii, you're learning what to do and what not to do. And if you live through it, well, you learned.
And when you describe that graying out, most people haven't experienced that. Does your vision start to go dim? Does the blood rush from your face? Are you getting lightheaded? What is it?
Your blood rushes from your head.
Yeah.
And your eyesight goes. You go, in effect, you're blind. You're not really, really conscious. You're just, for a short time, you're out of it. But you're talking about a fraction of a minute.
Uh-huh.
You're not talking about a long period of time.
It can still be long enough to kill you, but I'm just trying to think of something to compare it to. Maybe it's kind of like taking a dimmer switch and taking it all the way to the off position.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it snaps back on.
Yeah, it comes back on. If you've ever been knocked out in the dentist's office to have a tooth pulled, you're there and then you're not there. And then you're there.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, the tooth has been pulled. You know, the people have had that. That's a pretty comparable.
And most of us are saying no thank you, right? It's time for our first break. But when we come back, we're going to dive into some of Walt Burr's Corsair missions in the Pacific in 1945. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is RVCountry.com. rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.